Translation. Lord Brahma, thus seeing the personality of Godhead in his fullness, was overwhelmed with joy within his heart. And thus, in full transcendental love and ecstasy, his eyes filled with tears of love, he thus bowed down before the Lord. That is the way of the highest perfection for the living being, Paramahamsa. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that this great literature is meant for the Paramahamsas, Paramo Nirmatsaranam Satam, i.e. the Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for persons completely free from malice. In the conditioned life, the malicious life begins from the top, namely bearing malice against the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Personality of Godhead is an established fact in all the revealed scriptures, and in the Bhagavad Gita, the personal feature of the Supreme Lord is especially mentioned, so much so that the last portion of the great literature has emphatically stressed that one should surrender unto the Personality of Godhead to be saved from the miseries of life. Unfortunately, persons with impious backgrounds do not believe in the Personality of Godhead, and everyone wants to become God himself without any qualification. This malicious nature in the conditioned soul continues even up to the stage when a person wants to be one with the Lord, and thus even the greatest of the empiric philosophers speculating on becoming one with the Supreme Lord cannot become a Paramahamsa because the malicious mind is there. Therefore, the Paramahamsa stage of life can be attained only by those who are fixed in the practice of Bhakti Yoga. This Bhakti Yoga begins if a person has the firm conviction that simply discharging devotional service to the Lord in full transcendental love can elevate him to the highest perfectional stage of life. Brahmaji believed in this art of Bhakti Yoga. He believed in the instruction of the Lord to execute tapa, and he discharged the function with great penance and thus achieved the great success of seeing the Vaikuntha Lokas and the Lord also by personal experience. No one can reach the abode of the Supreme Lord by any mechanical means of the mind or machine, but one can reach the abode of the Vaikuntha Lokas simply by following the process of Bhakti Yoga, because the Lord can be realized only through the Bhakti Yoga process. Lord Brahmaji was actually sitting on his lotus seat, and from there, by executing the process of Bhakti Yoga in great seriousness, he could see the Vaikuntha Lokas with all variegatedness, as well as the Lord in person and his associates. Following in the footsteps of Lord Brahma, any person, even up to this day, can attain the same perfection by following the path of the Paramahamsa as recommended herein. Lord Chaitanya also approved of this method of self-realization for men in this age. One should first, with all conviction, believe in the Personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, and without making efforts to realize him by speculative philosophy, one should prefer to hear about him from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, and later from the text of the Srimad Bhagavatam. One should hear such discourses from a person Bhagavatam, and not from the professional man or from the karmi, jnani, or yogi. That is the secret of learning the science. One does not need to be in the renounced order of life. He can remain his present condition of life, but he must search out the association of a bona fide devotee of the Lord and hear from him the transcendental message of the Lord with faith and conviction. That is the path of the Paramahamsa recommended herein. Amongst various holy names of the Lord, he is also called Ajita, or one who can never be conquered by anyone else. Yet he can be conquered by the Paramahamsa path, as practically realized and shown by the great spiritual master Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma has personally recommended this Paramahamsa Pantaha in his own words as follows. Gyane priyasam udapasya namanta eva jivanti sanmukharitam bhavadiya vartam stane stita srutigatam tanuvan manobir ya priyaso jita jitopi asi tais trilokyam. Lord Brahma said, O my Lord Krishna, a devotee who abandons the path of empiric philosophical speculation aimed at merging in the existence of the Supreme and engages himself in hearing your glories and activities from a bona fide sadhu or saint and who lives an honest life in the occupational engagement of his social life can conquer your sympathy and mercy even though you are ajita or unconquerable. Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 14, Text 3. That is the path of the Paramahamsas, which was personally followed by Lord Brahma, and later recommended by him for attaining perfect success in life. Om Gyana Timanandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Anmilitamina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So this is kind of a crescendo verse in a sense, and it's a verse full of emotion, or at least it's letting us getting insight into the emotion that's succumbed to Lord Brahma. So the verse is Tat Darshana, and so there's an audience of the Lord. So I want to just to read what that darshan is, just so we can recap. You can obviously go through the Bhagavatam yourself and read this, but when you do it verse by verse, sometimes you forget the overall picture. So what's interesting is that the same word darshan is there, and in one of the earlier verses, then Krishna reveals, he gives darshan, he gives this audience of himself in a certain way. The personality of Godhead, for a little kind of preliminary. So Lord Brahma, he's got this urge to create, this kind of surging within him. And he doesn't know actually how to, well, what do I do with it? What do I do with this urge? How can I fulfill it? He's been born for a purpose. He knows that. It's kind of within his genes, you could say. So he's looking for some inspiration, and then he gets this word, tapa. And he knows what it means. In other words, Lord Brahma wasn't just some random guy who appeared to be born in the middle of the beginning of the universe with an immense task, and he had to kind of wing it. He knew what his purpose was. We hear that Lord Brahma is either a living entity coming up and leaving, or sometimes is coming into the material world through the role of Lord Brahma. So he has this urge to create, and he went, well, how do I do it? I've got this urge to do it. How do I fulfill this? There's this, and he knows he's got to create the universe. So first of all, he's trying to, where am I? And he couldn't find out where the source. He knew he was on a seat, a lotus. He didn't know where the origin was, which is interesting, which means even Lord Brahma couldn't, by his ability, work out the universe. So what to speak of ourselves, and we try to attempt this. And then he gets his word tapa, and he knew what it meant. He got this sense that perform austerity. Now what's significant is that Prabhupada points out in one of the purports here that, I mean, generally we don't use the word tapa so much in our Pali, in our kind of Pali, in our kind of terminology, we don't often talk about it. But his tapa was pure devotional service. It was the path of Bhakti Yoga. And the conclusion was that that the Lord revealed himself by the power of that tapasya. Now, I don't know if any of you calculated how long Lord Brahma was meditating for. It was described he was meditating for 1,000 years of the demigods. And Prabhupada in the pulpit explains how you calculate that. It's 2 billion years. He meditated, he performed austerity for 2 billion years. Now, in one sense, that's a long time. For him, it was half a day. A day of Brahma is 4 billion years. Now, we know that because Kali Yuga is 432,000 years. And one Chatur Yuga, which is 4 yugas, is 10 times that. And then 1,000 of those is a day of Brahma. So 4 billion years. So Lord Brahma was meditating, performing his penance for 2 billion years, or half a day in his terminology. So somehow, but so therefore his absorption, his tapasya was devotional service because Krishna was pleased by it and therefore he revealed something to himself. Now it's possible, you could imagine, that just like us in our own sadhanas, I mean, for example, the other day, Srinivasa was taking us on a journey of the holy places of India through the writings of Bhakti Vikash Swami, who wrote this book. And he was taking there, and therefore we could get a glimpse of these places without physically going there through the process of our mind and picturing what he was describing. So it's possible that Lord Brahma, in his meditations, I'm speculating here, but it's a philosophical bhakti speculation, he may also be meditating on pastimes of the Lord. It's possible. He's meditating on certain things. But the conclusion was that the Lord revealed himself. So in other words, there's a difference between meditating on something and actually seeing it. For example, I know you're all, most of your residents here, but those of us who are householders, we mostly watch the program from home. And there's a difference from watching at home than actually participating in it. So for example, today, we were immersed with 5 beautiful kirtans. The Mangalati was beautiful, the Singhadev was beautiful, the Tulsi Puja was beautiful, and the morning kirtan was beautiful. And then you're all here with the devotees, and you're seeing the deities, you're seeing the devotees, you're experiencing the kirtan, you could say directly. There's a different experience from it. Similarly, when we're chanting our japa, we can meditate on the deity, we can meditate on the holy name, but it's not necessarily, well, maybe some of you are fortunate that we're actually seeing Krishna directly through that chanting. So meditating on something is kind of sadhana bhakti. But here, Lord Krishna is so happy, so satisfied with Lord Brahma and his tapasya. It's not just dry, cold-hearted tapasya for the sake of it. It's devotional service. He's performing devotional service. And we can also reflect that for us, devotional service is sometimes tapasya. To sit and chant your rounds attentively is tapasya. To go to the morning, to attend temple functions is tapasya. To be nice to devotees is tapasya. To consciously think about Krishna all the time is tapasya. It's creating a penance. So devotional service is a tapasya. We're sacrificing our natural tendency to absorb ourselves in sense gratification, to fix our mind on something that's ultimately beneficial for us. So Lord Brahma is performing this tapasya, but it's of such quality, it's of such devotional quality that Lord Krishna manifests. Therefore, it's not just, you know, anyway, the Prabhupada is quite ecstatic about that. It's not just dry impersonalism. He's meditating on the Supreme Lord. He's performing bhakti yoga through his tapasya. So now I want to just remind ourselves what this vision was that Lord Krishna manifested. So first of all, he manifested in front of Lord Brahma the Vaikuntha worlds. And it's described here, it doesn't say Vaikuntha in the text, but it says the planet beyond all planets. There's no planet more further than that planet. He reveals it. And this transcendental abode of the Lord is adored by all self-realized persons, freed from all kinds of miseries and fear of illusory existence. So devotees, they appreciate that place. In that in that personal abode of the Lord, the material modes of ignorance and passion do not prevail. Nor is there any of their influences, nor is there any of their influence in goodness. In other words, it's pure goodness, pure happiness. There is no predominance of the influence of time. So what to speak of the illusory external energy? In terms of time, I was thinking, well, obviously there's activity, there's pastimes, there's things flowing from one to the other. So there's appearance of time. But in terms of what Krishna says, of time I am the destroyer of all things. So it's not a destructive manifestation of time. It's just a beautiful flowing of one activity to another. So it's no material where time is that we know is destroying everything. We know that we fear time. If we're having a good time, we fear that time is going to, that good time is going to come to an end. We don't want the bad things to come. We want the good, but we know that time doesn't play like that. It's going to destroy everything. That's its inherent nature in the material world. But without discrimination, both the demigods and the demons worship the Lord as devotees. That was described in, I can't remember his name now, but he gave a very wonderful explanation about that. The inhabitants of the Vaikuntha planets are described as having a glowing sky bluish complexion. Their eyes resemble lotus flowers. Their dress is of yellowish color, and their bodily features very attractive. They are just the age of growing youths. They all have four hands. They are all nicely decorated with pearl necklaces, with ornamental medallions, and they all appear to be effulgent. So first of all, it's a place. It's not a big blob of light. This is is a place, and there are people there. People that we'd recognize, okay, some interesting characteristics, but they're people as we would identify as people. Some of them are effulgent like coral and diamonds in complexion and have garlands on their heads, blooming like lotus flowers, and some wear earrings. In other words, it's not just a cloned Vaikuntha. It's full of variety. And if you get the chance to read the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you find there's so much variety. As he's progressing to various places, he finds these beautiful forms of Vishnu, and then he goes to another place, and there are even more beautiful forms of Vishnu, and there's even beautiful animal forms of Vishnu. There's so many beautiful varieties. So it's full of variety. The Vaikuntha planets are also surrounded by various airplanes, all glowing and brilliantly situated. These airplanes belong to the great Mahatmas, or devotees of the Lord. The ladies are as beautiful as lightning because of their celestial complexions. And all these combined together appear just like the sky decorated with both clouds and lightning. The goddess of fortune, in her transcendental form, is engaged in the loving service of the Lord's lotus feet. And being moved by the black bees, followers of spring, she is not only engaged in variegated pleasure, service to the Lord along with her constant companions, but is also engaged in singing the glories of the Lord's activities. There's things going on. There's activities. The goddess of fortune, she's fully engaging herself and her followers in serving the Lord. Lord Brahma saw in the Vaikuntha planets the personality of Godhead, who is the Lord of the entire devotee community, the Lord of the goddess of fortune, the Lord of all sacrifices, and the Lord of the universe, and who is served by the foremost servitors like Nanda, Sunanda, Prabala, Arjuna, his immediate associates. This verse is very interesting. The personality of Godhead, seen leaning favorably towards his loving servitors, his very sight intoxicating and attractive, appeared to be very much satisfied. He had a smiling face decorated with an enchanting reddish hue. He was dressed in yellow robes and wore earrings and a helmet on his head. He had four hands, and his chest was marked with the lines of the goddess of fortune. The Lord was seated on his throne, and he was surrounded by different energies like the four, the 16, the five, and the six natural opulences, along with other insignificant energies of the temporary character. But he was the factual Supreme Lord enjoying his own abode. So that's Tadarshana. That's what Lord Brahma has just seen. And what's the outcome? Alada Padipluta. Prahlad, who heard that, we sing that every day. Joy. He'd become overwhelmed with joy. Overwhelmed. The word Padipluta means like a, it's like a river. It kind of floods. So the happiness isn't just a feeling of joy. It's kind of overwhelming sense of joy. Antara. Within the heart. Within himself, he's feeling this joy. An overwhelming sense of happiness inside. This, here, this kind of word heart is often used. It's something inside. It's not talking about the organ of the heart. It's talking about the region of the heart. That's where we are. That's where Krishna is as a Paramatma. And that's where emotions are felt. So within himself, he's feeling this overwhelming sense of joy. Hrishyat Tanu. And his body is in full of ecstasy. So inside he's feeling overwhelmed with joy, and his body is also manifesting this ecstasy in his body. Prema Bara, and his foot, again, in full transcendental love. He's completely absorbed in loving Vishnu in this form. He's so saturated in it. And it manifests by Ashru Lochana, that tears are just flowing from his eyes. And so this, so he's feeling joy inside, and externally his body's manifesting these feelings of ecstasy. And these tears, they're cold tears. Whenever devotees experience some ecstasy and tears come, they may note that the tears are cold, they're not hot tears. And what does he do? What does he do with all this? Nanama. He simply bows down. Pada Ambujam, under the lotus feet of the Lord. This is, what else can you do? You're overwhelmed. You just bow down to the lotus feet of Krishna. Vishvasrig, the creator of the universe. This is a very important term here, because what's happened? In front of him, he's witnessed all these energies of the Lord. So he's under no illusion. He's getting, you could say, honed down. Although he's going to be, you could say, the creator of the universe, it's Krishna himself who is actually the creator of the universe. He's providing all the facilities, all the energies, all the abilities, all the processes. He's providing it all. So this is what Lord Brahma can see by this manifestation in front of him. It's like going, for example, you go into the temple workshop or the Goshala, and all the tools are there. And you find the manual how to operate it. You kind of get this inspiration inside to build something. And you're whoever wants you to do something says, do something, you do it. And you understand at every stage of it, anything that comes from it is simply being given by that person. So Lord Brahma knows that although he's going to be replicating some of these things in the actual manifestation of the universe, all the abilities are coming from the Supreme Lord. So he knows that. Yat Paramahamsena Patadi Gamyate, that this is the process, this is the path followed by the Paramahamsas. This path of lifetimes. A lifetime of dedication to the Supreme Lord, a life of tapasya, of surrendering to Krishna, of performing devotional service, and ultimately seeing the Supreme Lord. That is the path that's followed by the Paramahamsas. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada speaks quite extensively about the Paramahamsas. And he points out that the Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for the Paramahamsas. Now, what we can take from that is that we can measure our own Paramahamsa status by how much we are wanting the Srimad Bhagavatam, how much we're pulling the Srimad Bhagavatam off the shelf and eagerly reading it and absorbing ourselves in it. So the Bhagavatam is meant for the Paramahamsas. So those who are Paramahamsas, they can't get enough of it. So we can measure ourselves perhaps using that. And it's also kind of a bit harsh term here. Probably use the word malicious. That if we're not Paramahamsa, there's a bit of malice in our heart. We have something, and malice is quite a hard term. It means to want to harm the Lord. So, anyway, a number of things have been described here. That the Supreme Lord is established as a fact in all the revealed scriptures. So then to not accept it, and Prabhupada says here, so much so that, I mean, and also the personal feature of the Lord is stressed. We may have our own verses that we may recall in the Bhagavad Gita that talks about the personality of God. For me, something to come to mind is, Krishna says, well, Arjuna, never was a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. That I'm a person, you're a person, we're all persons. Then another verse for me comes to mind, Abhijanati Mamudha Manashim. So fools deride me when I descend in a human form, they think I would just assume this form. And then we have the 11th chapter where it describes the universal form, and then it goes to the fourth arm form, then it goes to two arm form. And then the verse that Prabhupada is talking about here is Sarva Dhamman Parijagya Mami Kam Sharanam Praja Ham Twam Sava Papi Bhyo Moksha Ishami Mashu Chaham. That just give everything. Just surrender to me, and I will save you from everything. So that's the Bhagavad Gita, very clearly, emphatically saying Krishna is a person. So therefore, but this malicious nature in the conditioned soul, it prevents him from appreciating it. Now, Prabhupada points out that sometimes people are kind of born in that situation. They're born in families where the Lord is not understood or appreciated. So there's a kind of maliciousness that I don't want to serve God. I think I'd like to be served myself. And I think it's what you're referring to here, where Prabhupada says, everybody wants to be God himself without any qualification. Everybody wants to be God. Well, one of the classes earlier, a devotee was pointing out that people are attracted by the six opulences. So people, yeah, I'd like to be very beautiful. I'd like to be very intelligent. I'd like to be famous. I'd like to be renowned, so I don't get too caught up with the fame. I'd like to be very intelligent. We can recognize, yeah, people are drawn to these. So in that sense, people are, they like to be, have these kind of godly qualities. And they like to be the boss. They want people to listen to them, their words. So this is kind of inherent. Now, another aspect to it is that people have this inherent desire to be God because they are God sparks. We're jivas. Mamevam sho jiva loke jiva buddha sanatana. We're sparks of Krishna. So it's natural for us to want no death. And we have these inherent qualities of Krishna, but in a minute form. So there's something yearning within us to experience them in full. But because of the malicious nature, then we don't want to give the conditioned soul don't want to give credit to Krishna. Even to the point that he hasn't got a form. So Srila Prabhupada's pranam mantra is, he's come to save us from impersonalism and voidism. Those who give God no form, there's no God, there's no form, and also those who, again, take away there's nothing, or there's something, but it is not form. So that's kind of a malice there. It's malicious to kind of see the Lord in that regard. So while you have that malice, Prabhupada's pointing out here that you can't be a Paramahamsa. This revelation given to Lord Brahma is because he's a Paramahamsa. He's got no malice in his heart. He's pure, pure lover, prema. That's his nature. His character is loves the Lord. And therefore, Vishnu can manifest these things. I mean, think about it in our own life. Are we ready? Are we actually ready to see the Vaikuntha world in front of us? Are we ready to see it and completely go there? Are we ready for that? So Lord Brahma, he was. But he obviously wasn't going to go because he had things to do. He's got this universe to create. But the characteristic that he has enabled him to create without any bewilderment of mind. He's got such an important service. So we can learn from this that Lord Brahma had a role to play in the service of the Lord. And we also have a role to play. We're learning about the Srimad Bhagavatam. We're learning about Krishna. And we've got to do something to help him. We have to purify ourselves, but at the same time, we got to get on with serving him. Now we may say, well, Lord Brahma, he meditated for 2 billion years. So maybe I should meditate for 2 billion years first. But we can't wait. In fact, the methodology that Srila Prabhupada gave us is that we purify ourselves and at the same time we serve Krishna. We help the mission. The most urgent, you could say, service is to help Srila Prabhupada and help Lord Caitanya in trying to spread the movement, in trying to spread Krishna consciousness. That's our service. So we purifying ourselves at the same time as serving the Lord in that way. Now, what's also interesting pointing out here is that Lord Brahma achieved his perfection just by sitting on top of a lotus flower. And Prabhupada points out that actually we can also do that. We can also get this vision of Vaikuntha, of Krishna, of Vishnu, if he chooses to manifest himself. If we please him, then he will reveal himself. He doesn't have to reveal himself, but these verses tell us that he will reveal himself. If he's so happy with if he's so happy with our devotion, he will show you these things. So he wants it. It sounds a bit mechanical, but it's not. It's just a gift that he gives. So Prabhupada's pointing out here that even today, right now, in your location, wherever you are, if you apply yourself with serious devotional service, then you can become a Paramahamsa. Give up all these kind of materialistic things and have this vision of the Lord revealed to you. Okay. Hare Krishna. Any questions? Prabhu. The microphone?
First he heard the word Pasya, and then he wrote Brahma Samhita after. And then in Brahma Samhita, there are a few verses describing Lord Chamasundar, two-handed for Krishna. It means Yada Darshan of Krishna as it is. But most of the verses of Brahma Samhita describes Narayana and Vaikuntha, Lakshmis. So he knew that Chamasundara is the highest, that he chose, or whatever. This is his worshipable deity, Lord Narayana. So you said highest planet is revealed to him, but highest planet is Goloka Vrindavan, not Vaikuntha. I had a question, but I forgot the line, but you know what I want to say. I guess.
When was the Brahma Samhita written?
Prabhupada says first he heard the word tapasya, and then he wrote Brahma Samhita, means after his tapasya. Okay. So, and still, this Brahma Mohana Lila, again, he couldn't accept that this Chamasundara, 204 boy, is Krishna, until he saw Narayana form, because this is worshipable deity, and then he recognized, oh, this is my worshipable deity. Interesting.
Yeah, interesting. I think sometimes we forget because we're schooled in the Krishna Bhakta line, and sometimes we kind of seems that we're relegating Lord Vishnu to some kind of demigod role. But this is the Vaikuntha world, and for those who see, obviously the gopis, when they saw Vishnu manifested, that they wanted Krishna because that was the finesse of their devotion. But Lord Vishnu is Lord Krishna. So the difference is, it's Leela, it's rasa, rather than anything philosophical. It's like we ourselves, we have our own favorite deities. And I heard a talk one time, I think we were in Vrindavan, and the devotee was talking about the glories of Vrindavan. And someone else said, well, the glories of Navadvipa are better. And his point was, well, I like Vrindavan. So it may be that from certain criteria there's higher and lower, but sometimes you have your own particular tastes. And also, the Vaikuntha planets are filled with devotees of Vishnu. They're not feeling hard done by. They're feeling completely satisfied with the relationship of Lord. So we hear the differences. And it's interesting to know the differences. But in terms of the devotees who have aligned themselves and that's the soul, they're fully satisfied with that devotion. So I don't know any deeper answer about Lord Brahma and Shyamasundar or Vaikuntha. I can't say anything more deeper.
Also in our line, I mean, why Prabhupada choose that particular verse from Brahma Samhita to be sung every morning, but not some other which describe Narayana. I guess that this was first time in our society that Prabhupada established that morning program. Like in Gaudiya Mada had completely different morning program. Mm-hmm. Totally different songs, everything different. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada established that. That particular, I don't know, is it any other verse? I think it's only two verses that describe Shyamasundara within the entire Brahma Samhita. We choose that as a...
Oh. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that thought-provoking question. Any other questions or comments? Prabhu? Coco wants it.
Hare Krishna. So sometimes when we are doing tapasya or austerity, it's very easy to fall into like a mentality or like a version of tapasya that whereby you kind of forsake some of that warmth or rasa, or, you know, because we're saying we're doing, you know, devotional service and practice, not yet approaching, you know, rasa stage. So sometimes that could... we could become a little bit impersonal in the process, so how do you avoid that? Because after all, we're trying to, you know, assist, like devotees are also Krishna, right? So we're kind of like practicing how to be in the spiritual world. How do we balance that? Because we live in the material world. There is so much that you have to kind of, you know, curb. There are lots of challenges. So how do you do that?
Well, I was reflecting that... sometimes I recall when we were doing Govardhan Parikram, there was like a macho approach. Who's going to get around Govardhan Hill the quickest? And they were timing themselves. So it was like an athletic approach to Govardhan Parikram. So you can do it that way. You're still walking around Govardhan Parikram to get the benefits. But as a person, individual, how can you get the most from it? And that's where you get the most from it, by your absorption of mind. So Lord Brahma is performing these tapasyas, but he's using that tapasya as his meditation. So we struggle with this all the time. We do something, and then we look around, and then we're noticed. So we have to all, we're checking it all. We're trying to, again, get rid of all this stuff that's not Krishna. We're trying to neti, not this. Get it out. And just... find that time to absorb our mind in devotional and try to peel away all this egotism that's, you could say, affecting our ability to perform pure devotional service. So it's a lifetime struggle. And we'll always be noticing something, because that's the process of it, because Krishna is so beautiful, the soul is so pure, that any little tinges will be inconvenienced by it along the path. So it's an ongoing thing. So we have to keep checking ourselves. But we still have to do, for example, that verse in the Bhagavad Gita is very, very informative. You have a right to perform your prescribed duty. Don't be attached to the fruit of your results. Don't be attached to not doing your duty. And don't think... So you've still got to do it. You've still got to do the things that you're doing in devotional service, even though you may be plagued by the problems that are challenging you. You still got to do devotional service. And you may be riding on the waves of the tapasya yourself, but you can see that. You can see what you're doing, and you're only kidding yourself, because most other people can see it anyway. But so ourselves, we kind of hide that, we try to hide from others, but everyone can see what we're doing. So it's important that we're as honest as possible for Krishna's sake, because he can see it. So we've got to keep purging ourselves of these things.
Can I ask Can I ask a follow-up question?
Yeah.
Did someone else have a question?
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
When we hear all these instructions, like by Rupa Goswami, or just acharyas, we could think, oh, that is something we have to achieve. But actually, could you look at that with an eye that can actually make your journey easier if you just try what they're saying? Is that kind of true? Because
When you say that, to me, the verse comes to mind, Utsahan nischiyat deryat tat tat karma pravartanat sango chagat satorvite sadbir bhakti vinishiti. This is enthusiasm, confidence, patience, following certain methodology of doing things, avoiding bad association, taking good association. It's the tools of progressing in devotional service. But actually, these are tools for living a life. If you want to be successful in anything, be enthusiastic, be confident, be patient, do it in a certain way, avoid people who aren't into it, take company of people who are into it. So the tools, how you utilize them is up to you. Okay. We shall stop there. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Yeah.